Well, hello there, HW here, and thank you so much for listening to episode 16 of the Tone Junkie podcast. It's about 8 in the morning. I am posted up on my porch again. Time for another porch episode of the Tone Junkie podcast. I've got some iced coffee next to me. The construction trucks don't seem to be out today, which is good. I appreciate it. I appreciate that they're allowing the neighborhood to stay quiet, peaceful, and calm. And after this, I've got the day scheduled where I've got to go finish up some packs and stuff. I cleared the schedule for today. And I'm going to be this week, the new Bad Cat stuff is coming out. So it's going to be the Bad Kitty packs, going to be the Luke and the Jude, I guess. I've been debating what do I call the Bad Cat Judah profile set. Bad Kitty, you know, Michael Britt goes Wild Kitty. I've been saying Bad Kitty, and I think that's good. I'm going to probably stick with the Bad Kitty theme. So the Bad Kitty Luke is going to be a pack. It's got the Jeffrey Kundi kind of settings, and it's the Jeffrey Kundi amp. I'm debating, what do I call the Judah? I thought about calling it the Lion of Pack. I thought about calling it the Tribe Pack, but those are all references I'm just not sure that everyone's going to get. I know my KPW bros are going to get it. I know the church guys are going to get it, because it's supposed to be, the story behind that amp is that Bad Cat took some input from people on the gear port and tried to make an amp that would speak to everybody in praise and worship circles. So what they did was they took the preamp from, is it the Wildcat? No, they took the preamp from the Hot Cat. Oh, don't worry, that's just a car alarm. They took the preamp from like a Hot Cat, or maybe it was a Cub or something. So it's a 12AX7 and EF86, and they put it together with a 6V6 power section. So made it 20 watts. So a manageable volume, really. And so what's cool about that amp is it's a cool amp. I got to tell you that. You don't see that type preamp. You're usually seeing that with EL84s, and so to match it with, or you see it scaled up to EL34s, which is kind of what the Luca does. The Luca and the Stella from Bad Cat would be Jeffrey Kundi and James Duke signature amps. But when you get it with the 6V6 stuff, it's a different quality. It's a very different character, and it's a cool one. So I'm excited about those packs, but why did I get on that tangent? I got on that tangent because I don't know what to call it. I don't want to call him Judah. I don't want to use that. Judas. That's too negative. The Jude. I don't know. Hey Jude. But then people are going to think, what is this, a Beatles thing? And then who knows what they're going to think. So I don't know, we might go Tribe or something. But anyway, I've got the day opened up to do some profiling today, because I profiled both those amps in the studio already. They came out really nice. But this morning, what I'm going to do is add in some profiles of putting them through the aux and putting them through some blues. And why that's really cool is, if you think about it, the Luca, I wouldn't normally be able to put through the blues. Now, I put out some tests a while ago. Some of you in some of the gear forums might have seen that I put out a couple test profiles testing the aux, in that scenario. But again, revisiting the aux thing, I think it's a really cool sort of add-on to make profiles with. It's not going to be my primary thing. I'm still going to be going into the studio because I really like our Tone Junkie setup. And I have not yet with the aux been able to really outdo that setup, I think. I haven't been able to replicate it perfectly because I'm using speakers that aren't in the aux. I'm using microphones that aren't in the aux. I'm using preamps that aren't in the aux. So maybe the aux is super accurate, but it's not giving me the models that I'm looking for to replicate what I'm doing in the studio. So for now, studio profiles are staying. They're definitely going to be part of all the Tone Junkie stuff moving forward, but I might be doing some free stuff and just some bonus add-on stuff with the aux. Not to say there's not an amp I won't just do with the aux. I could do that, especially because, you know, you've got Jeff Kundi now. he's recording with the Ox and playing live exclusively with the Ox. So maybe it's more accurate that I do the Ox stuff. But anyway, we put the Luca through the studio setup. Sounded great. Sounds like a giant big AC30. It's cool. We're going to put it through some blues with that. And since it's two EL34s, it would blow up my cab with blues. But with the Ox, doesn't matter. Gives it the proper load. Puts it through the cab with blues, the digital cab with blues. On the Ox, I can mic it up. And I get some EQs and stuff. And I can make it sound really nice. So I'm excited about that. People are going to have lots of choices. And choices are good. In Tone Junkie world, that is kind of what has become our thing, you know. I like being very exhaustive with these packs, and it's brought up another thing. The everything pack is getting so big, the library is getting so big, it's almost become for me a focus in itself of going, wow, how big could I make this library? You know, this is like the Kemper library. The Kemper library pass is like the Tone Junkie everything pack. So I'm going like, well, that's a cool thing. What does it mean to have like the largest library of commercial profiles? I don't know. I mean, now then I start to go here, because I'm a bit of an obsessive guy, if you haven't noticed. When I really get into something, I tend to have a lot of it, or get a lot of it. I really focus on it. I really, really, really focus on it. I get really obsessive. For those of you who maybe don't, who want to know, I'm a seven. I'm a seven with an eight wing. That's my Enneagram. And so addiction is actually one of the things that sevens are susceptible to, because they tend to obsess about things. And if they're not careful, they can get overly kind of into stuff. And it's funny, before that Enneagram book kind of got popular, and before, like, you know, doing that, the Enneagram is just kind of like a different Myers-Briggs, but it gives you a little more variation, I think. It's funny. I always notice. I remember I got really into Risk, the game Risk, like the old school game, you know, Risk, the game of global domination, where you've got a big map out and you have these little armies and pieces that are one army, five armies, 10 armies, and you roll dice. And I remember I was so into Risk, I would play Risk with anybody who would play with me. We would have these Risk nights at my house. You know, there's a period in my life where I think a lot of people in their college years really, you know, they really live it up. They really go party and stuff, right? I'm literally just like trying to do the minimum amount of work in college, because me and my wife joke all the time, we don't know how I made it through college. I don't know. I have a degree in entrepreneurship from the University of San Francisco. And my wife said to me a couple of years after I graduated, I started talking about wanting to go back and do a master's program. And I was already working at the time, and you know, I'd started my career and stuff, and things were good, but I had worked for 2 or 3 years, and I thought, you know, this is where a lot of times I notice some people go back. They get some real world experience. They get a little taste of the world under their belt, and then they go, okay, what do I want to do? It's kind of like now or never, right? I don't want to work for the next 10 years and then try to go back. So do I want to get a master's? And she looked at me and she said, are you crazy? I said, what do you mean? And she said, you hated school. I go, what? She goes, you hated school. She said, John, I don't even remember. She doesn't always call me HW, spoiler alert. She said, HW, I don't even remember you doing any work in college. I don't even know how you made it through college. And this goes back to something probably I said at the last podcast. I have always learned that if you could make people laugh, you tend to get, things just tend to go a little easier for you. And so I realized, yeah, I took 2 years of African American literature, and I realized I did not even read a book, which is crazy, isn't it? I 2 years of African American literature, and I did not even read a book. Which is really, really, I think it's impressive, and I'm a little bit proud of it. I got to be honest with you. For you to pass 2 years of literature courses without reading a book,
You know, that takes skill,
right? And I'm even going to go so far as to say anybody could read a book and tell you what it's about. But you try repeatedly participating in class discussions, repeatedly writing papers, and repeatedly actually our final exams would be sitting down with the teacher for a discussion and a debate style kind of thing, but really just a discussion interview type thing on the pieces of literature itself. And what I figured out was that if you just take the themes that you're hearing from the lectures and the themes you're hearing from in-class discussions, and you just relate them to even unimportant portions of the literature, you know, it sounds like you're thinking deeply about this stuff. And you know, college and school, modern learning and stuff is really about just, it's about that feedback loop. You just give the teachers back what they have told you 100 times, and they say, congratulations, you're learning. You're learning. I did something, and now you're copying me. You must be learning. Wow. And what's really interesting to me about that statement, I'm doing something, now you're doing it, you must be learning, is I notice that is 100% how people begin to learn, but it's not how people critically think. It's not how people develop expertise. That is the first part of learning, mimicry. And it's how my sons learn. I watch my little son, my younger son, Leo. And sometimes I joke with him, like, Leo, are you ever going to do anything yourself? Like, literally, he's a carbon copy of his older brother. The way he sits, the way he talks, everything is mimicking his older brother. If the older brother, Oliver, decides he's no longer into Pokemon, Leo's no longer into Pokemon. Mario's his favorite? Well, then Mario's his favorite. Although, let's be honest, little brothers get Luigi, don't they? If you were a little brother out there, you didn't get Mario. You got Luigi, right? You didn't, your favorite color was blue because red was taken. That's kind of how it goes. You get Luigi. Little brothers get Luigi. Okay, anyway, jumping back, the Bad Cat stuff's coming out, and I got a basement in here, and I ordered this basement, and I think the tubes were all messed up. It was pretty beat up and everything, but okay, the basement. Okay, the point of this first podcast segment here was that I wanted to update you on what I've been doing with some profile stuff. I didn't plan on getting into a diatribe about learning, but that's where we are at this point. So let me tell you something I learned yesterday. Because yesterday, I had a chance to plug in for the first time the powered Kemper that I bought. And some of you know that I'm selling what was the Tone Junkie backup Kemper. I have 2 Kempers that I just run around with. And here, I'm going to get into this for a minute. I came to the realization last night, too. This is not what I was going to talk about, what I wanted to say I learned. But I came to the realization after thinking about it. I sat down and I thought all the uses I have for Kempers. And I sat there and I go, okay, I've got my main Kemper, right? And I usually put that on my desk. And I usually use that to dial in profiles. And then I take that to the studio. But then I got a backup Kemper. And I started thinking, this backup Kemper is great. Here's why. Because I love leaving the backup Kemper in a bag with the cables and with the remote ready to go. And if it's got my performances on it, then what I do is I don't even pack up my Kemper in the morning. I've got one Kemper on my desk that I'm dialing in profiles and making videos and stuff with. Then I grab my other Kemper on the way out the door. It's already packed up. I don't even need to unplug or plug anything in or do any of that. There's no opportunity to forget cords, to forget anything, to, oops, I left my TRS cable at home, right? Now I can't use my volume pedal or my morphing pedal. None of that. You don't forget anything. Oops, it's already packed up. It's ready to go. Grab it, you go. So I thought, man, this is great. I love having two Kempers. I love having one on my desk and then one that I take with me that I go out with and play. Then I thought this. I thought, I'm going to start taking this other Kemper to the studio. So I have one Kemper that just sits on my desk. Then I've got another Kemper that I take with me, either to play live or to bring to the studio to profile. Well, okay, that works great. So I kind of started doing that with the second Kemper. I started profiling on it, playing live with it, doing that sort of thing. Then I realized, well, here's the problem. Twice I showed up to the studio, and because I wasn't packing up my desk, I forgot to bring my USB keyboard, which I also use on my desk because I use it for my computer. So then I realized, okay, maybe I should get – now this sounds ridiculous, and I haven't done this because it's ridiculous. But then I thought, okay, I'm going to get three Kempers. I'm going to have one packed up in a bag with a separate USB keyboard that I bring to the studio with me all the time. Then I'm going to have another that I grab and carry out live, and I thought I'll put that one in one of those Pelican cases. Then I've got one sitting on my desk. Then I realized that's silly. I'm not going to do that. I don't need three Kempers. I'm going to go to two Kempers. So I order the power Kemper. Because I go, well, my backup Kemper, I don't need two. Why do I have two unpowered Kempers? One of them could at least be powered, right? That way, if I'm ever in a situation, because occasionally I've been doing a couple little one-off gigs for artists and stuff. There's all sorts of independent artists in Nashville and stuff. Or you just go play at a church or something. But, you know, there's one or two that I've done some traveling with, just one-off dates here and there. I'm not a big deal. Not in that regard. Implication being in some other regard, HW is a big deal. Okay, but no. Just doing some little things. So I thought, well, maybe if I have to travel and I want to get some stage volume, and they usually there's a backline or cabs provided or something. Even if I bring a Kemper, they never know I'm going to do that. And I'll get a powered Kemper. Plus, I want to try it out because I never really got what the whole thing with direct profiles was. But recently on the Dairy Boy pack, I made some direct profiles. And my goal was, and then I made some of the JTM-45, and then I'm going to make some of the AC-30. And so I'm making some of the AC-30, and I'm about to sell that amp, and then I'm probably, the Sues wants to sell his 3015. So I'm putting together a little direct profile bundle pack. And then you can expect it going on in the future here, nearly all of the profile packs that come out should have some direct profiles with them. I don't see why I can't do that. It's something I should have been doing for a long time, and I regret that I haven't. But there are some amps I can get my hands back on again. Like, for example, I think we're going to be able to get some direct profiles of some more matchless stuff in the future. And so I can either – I probably won't add them to packs that have already been purchased, but I might just give them away for free, some direct versions of those profiles. Anyway – ice cold cold brew is yummy. Very good. Okay. So I realized, okay, I don't need that. I just need a powered Kemper and a regular Kemper. So I've got my backup. Now, some of you might be thinking, hey, come on, what do you need two Kempers for? I really do have a very good use for two Kempers, and that's this. If my main Kemper broke, one, I don't know, I would have to borrow one from the Sues, which is possible. His church has six of them. But really, my fear is, what happens if I'm trying to profile like that day and my Kemper craps out on me? You know what I mean? I've got amps here. I'm not trying to mess up the Tone Junkie schedule and what I'm trying to achieve with Tone Junkie in terms of getting these amps done and getting them out, and in terms of creating one of the largest libraries of Kemper profiles anywhere. And side note, I was looking at the rig exchange earlier and I started doing some math. I thought, okay, at this current rate of production, if I upped it just a little bit, how long would it take me to build a library larger than the Rig Exchange? Because, man, that would be something. But I don't know. That seems a little crazy. But I think I just might be the crazy enough guy to do it. So we're going to see. But I also got to be careful. I got to manage my motivation. That cannot become my primary motivation, to make a commercial profile library larger than the Rig Exchange. Because then what I'm going to start doing is stuffing the packs. And we don't want filler. We just want killer. Tone Junkie profiles need to be killer, not filler. So I don't want to incentivize myself to start. I don't want to give myself any perverse incentives to start doing the wrong thing. So not going to focus on that. I'm going to focus on just quality profile sets like I've been putting out, going there with that. Okay, though, here's why I need two, because what if my – here's why I need two Kempers, because what if my Kemper really does crap out on me and then I'm like, oh, no, this messes up everything. So I thought I really do need a backup Kemper. And I have my first Kemper, my white unit, is sort of an older unit. And I don't know why, but I've always just – that unit has done so many weird glitchy things to me that sometimes I'm just looking at it and I'm like, I know you're – I know one of these days when I need you most, you're going to just tell me there's some error and you're just going to laugh at me. Like, and I'm going to be like, okay, here I am. Here – like it's going to be like, here I am. I'm sitting down with John Mayer. We're doing all the John Mayer amps today, and the Kemper's going to be like, error, send me to Texas. And I'm going to be like, no! Okay, but no problem. I have my backup Kemper for that. So luckily, two is I think, enough that it's going to mitigate any need and any downside I'm going to have from Kemper reliability, which I say that there's no issue with Kemper reliability. It's just like, you know, there's a lot of units out there. I can't tell you how many units are sold. I've been sworn to secrecy, but there's a lot of units out there. So when you see ones that say this one broke, if you consider how many units are out there, I mean, that's just typical for any mass produced, you know, piece of anything. But so then I started thinking this. I get my power Kemper and I thought, okay, now this is something. I thought this. I am just going to leave this power Kemper set up, plugged into a cab, and set up just like a regular amp under my window next to my desk. Then I'm going to have my other Kemper on top of my desk here. And that way, even if I don't have my Kemper set up, plugged in, I just got back from the studio, I've got a Kemper ready to go, and it does perfect amp in the room tone, which is what else I want to talk about, the direct Kemper in my experience, the direct profiles and a powered Kemper in my experience so far. But basically, that right there, I thought, well, this is going to be great. The powered Kemper into a cab, and then boom, that's going to be the setup. I'm going to hook a remote up to that, and I'm going to dial in my stuff on my Kemper through my FRFR, but just for playing around, you know, it'll be kind of a more organic experience by just having it plugged into a cab right there. And I enjoy it. Dude, you know, amp in the room sound is something. It's great, I guess. So then I go on there and I go, hey guys, I'm selling my third Kemper. I bought a powered one to serve as my backup. Now I'm selling my third Kemper. And guess who jumps on there and starts asking questions? Mr. Nick Noble. Boy, do I have a bone to pick with you now. I'm being sarcastic here. I'm not actually mad at Nick Noble. And I'm taking note now so I can tag Nick later in a post that says, Nick, I mentioned you 22 minutes into this podcast. But Nick Noble goes on there and says, hey, just curious, what's the story? Like, HW, why are you selling a Kemper? We don't see you selling Kempers much, right? I can imagine that was the motivation. What's going on here? So I explain, hey, look, I have backup unpowered Kemper. My main one's unpowered. I figured I'd just get a powered one just to try it out. And since I'm going to have a powered one, I don't need this other unpowered one. I don't need two unpowered ones. I got a powered and unpowered. That's my backup. That's my everything I got there. And he says, oh, yeah, I got it. And he says, just curious. I thought maybe you were going rack or something. Ugh, why did he say that? As soon as he read that, I'm sitting there. I read this comment. I'm looking at picture me at my desk, right? The desk has got rack mounts, you know, rack space right below where the screens sit. And I'm literally reading this comment and my eyes just glance down, you know, 18 inches down to the rack space and they're empty. I haven't put anything in the rack of my desk. And I go, my word, wouldn't a rack Kemper just look glorious right there? And it could always be set up with my FRFR. It could always be plugged in. I could grab my profiling Kemper. I could go back, I could get a profiling Kemper, I could have my powered Kemper, and then I could have this rack unit, and this rack unit, I could dial everything in. It would always be there for videos and stuff. Then I thought, well, wait a minute, what about when I want to show the face of the Kemper? And I thought, well, I could still show the face of the Kemper, it's just that, you know, what about, I'm going to move inside while I keep talking, it's very, very warm out here now. I thought, okay, well, what about For videos and stuff, don't you need the Kemper face there? And I thought, well, yeah, but what if I set up a permanent camera? Like I get a little GoPro camera and I set up a permanent one just permanently fixed on there. I'd never have to worry about the angles. It'd be a small little camera. I probably don't need audio from that camera, or the audio I do capture, I wouldn't need to use in the video. Then my mind starts turning. Then I go back and revisit this sort of obsessive thing, which is, I have been on a campaign lately. A lot of you don't know this because I haven't shared it yet. You guys know there's a white Kemper rack out there. There's that one they showed at NAMM. And I happen to know where it is. And Kemper won't sell it to me. They won't sell it to me. The gentleman in the U.S. distributor, who's the head of U.S. distribution, has told me where it is. But I think the company doesn't really like it. They don't think it looks good, which is why it didn't really come out. And they told me they didn't want to create more SKUs. They already have white and black heads, and they've got powered and non-powered. In fact, I don't even know if there's powered white heads coming out anymore because it's just more SKUs. So they've got white and white and black unpowered heads. I believe all the powered heads are black. And then they've got powered and unpowered black rack units. So there's just, and then you add the remotes on there. There's just too many SKUs. They don't want to add more SKUs. I think they feel like, gosh, for one unit, we already have powered and unpowered. Giving it multiple colors, it just makes more SKUs. So they didn't do it. But here's the thing. There's one out there that exists. Oh my, can I please have that? I begged and begged and begged, and I could tell they found it entertaining, but I could tell I was not going to get this white rack, white whale Kemper. And in fact, about halfway through NAMM, as I mentioned it about a million times, they started to even deny that it exists, which is really funny because there's so much video evidence of it existing. But anyway, I started thinking, man, that would be really cool to get that. I'd have maybe the only white rack in existence. I think there's actually a couple other versions. There's some prototypes that I think are floating out there in the Kemper factory. But anyway, so then I started thinking about that. Then I started thinking, HW, you don't need all these Kempers. You need two Kempers. You need the one you're using and the backup. And having to pack it up on a Saturday night to go play on Sunday morning is not a lot of work. It's one of the features of the Kemper. You can easily pack it up, fit it in one bag with all your cables. It's not a giant tube amp and a pedal board. So what are you complaining about? And I guess I'm not complaining about anything. This goes back to my number seven. I entertain the fantasy, the voice in my head that tells me I need five Kempers. I need one to sit on top of my desk. I need one to be a desk unit, like a rack unit in the desk. One to sit on top of the desk. One that's just ready to go out for profiling, paired up with a USB laptop in the case at all times. Another one ready to go with my performances that goes with me to church. So that I don't forget my TRS cable. Isn't it amazing? I'm telling you, oh, I need another $2,000 piece of gear so I don't forget my little TRS cable. I know a lot of you are thinking, can't you just put the TRS cable in the bag and the USB keyboard in the bag? I guess you're right. You just saved me $2,000. Ding, ding, ding. Thank you. And then, you know, I need a power head. Oh, it would be great to just never unplug it. We could put it right here on this cab. That would be awesome. And then, look, the power head isn't stereo. It's not stereo out of the power head. So I guess I need a second power Kemper to sit there and go into my other cab so I can have stereo amp in the room sound. And then I can get stereo, direct sound out of my other two Kempers on the desk. So, you know, five Kempers. That's not crazy, is it? But it is. It is crazy. It is crazy. It's not logical. It's not a good use of money, and that's why I don't do it. Some of you are thinking, this guy with his Gold Sparkle Custom Shop just tried to say what a good use of money is, right? I hear you. I hear you. This guy with this constantly inflowing, you know, supply of amps. I had a buddy last night. a friend of mine from Facebook tell me, what is it like having the worst job in the world? You know, it's like sarcastic. I mean, he said it a little differently than this, but I just started laughing. And I always get a kick out of the comments on Facebook when people go, you must have the most amazing amp collection. And I think, well, if you look at the photos on Tone Junkie, you know, yeah, then I mean, yeah, I have an amazing amp collection. And I do at any one given time, I have some amps that I'm trying to profile, but I'm constantly buying and selling. When I call reverb.com, they like, I don't know if they sound an alarm or something, and not when I call them, I don't really call them, but you know, something goes wrong and I have to chat with their support or something. I could only imagine what internal alarms go off when it's like, when they look and they're like, this guy has spent how much on the site in the back? And they can see that I'm buying and selling, buying and selling, buying and selling. But what happens is it shows how much you've listed, how much you've received. And you know, you take a $2,000 amp and you buy it and sell it every 2 weeks. You can do the math. Every 2 weeks. How many 2 week periods in a year are there? There's 52 weeks in a year, so there's 26 2 week periods in a year. Multiply that by 2,000. You get to a big number pretty quick. Now you do that three or four times, because there's several amps that I'm trying to move at any one time. And when money comes in from that, a lot of times I don't even clear it out of Reverb. I just buy the next amp, bring it in. And so you can imagine what that looks like, what it looks like to them, what I'm spent. Now they can see, look, here's what he's bought, but then here's what he sold, you know? But they don't care. All that volume is just good for them. They love taking the 3.5% on all that. So they're happy, happy as a clam. That's why when I go to NAMM though, dude, when I go to NAMM, I take so much free Reverb swag. Because I look at it like this. It's like when you go to Las Vegas or you go to Atlantic City or South Lake Tahoe or wherever you go where there's casinos, Indian casino, whatever. Excuse me, Native American casino. When you go to a casino, they give you free drinks. And I always have some buddies that try to tell me this. I go, hey man, you up or down? And you know, HW, I like to play some blackjack and stuff. But like I told you before, I have an obsessive personality. This is something I identified at a very young age. And then later, I read some things about it. And I talked to somebody who asked me several questions in like a sit-down talk. And they confirmed my suspicion. They said, you are probably addicted to things right now. You're addicted. You should really, you really need to use caution around drugs, alcohol, everything. They mentioned some other things. Any compulsive behaviors, you gotta keep some boundaries up. So I do. So I don't. That's probably one of the things. I don't really drink. And even though I'm from California, I don't smoke weed or eat edibles or anything like that. I have, but they're a little weird. I more did it as an experiment, because at some point in your life, you get old enough and you go, okay, wait a minute. I'm how old now? And I've never had a weed brownie. Let me see what the fuss is about. Give me a bite of that. And for those of you who maybe have never, wow, this is getting into illicit drug use, but it's actually not illegal in California, and in several places. It just, you know what it's like? It makes you, I can't believe I'm putting this podcast. Remember in junior high when you would stay up really late and you got like really giddy and like slap happy and everything's funny with your friends? It's just like that, only you're in your 20s. It really is just like that. What's really strange to me too is it's weird how things affect you differently, because when I was in school, when I was at the University of San Francisco, I had a friend, her name was Kate, and I'm not going to tell you her last name, but Kate and I we paired up in a lot of groups and stuff to do like some work together, some research work, and just some project work in several classes. We, for some reason, we're just paired in all these classes together, which isn't that common in college to find someone in half of your classes. Just sort of works out that way. But Kate was one of those people who was probably the most organized, administrative, and one of the smartest people I ever met. And she could just get stuff done. She had amazing focus. But here's what I later learned about Kate as I became friends with Kate. Kate actually, when I first met Kate, she described herself as a day trader. I said, "Oh, do you work? You know, we're in school, so everyone's a student." I said, "Oh, do you work too?" She said, "Yeah, I'm a day trader." I later realized that was code for "I sell marijuana." Now, this was before the recreational use of marijuana was legal, but Kate did have a medical marijuana card in the state of California, which allowed her to possess certain amounts of marijuana and grow it for herself, but it was illegal for her to sell it. I'm not sure if Kate was growing her own or what, but I went to school in an area of San Francisco that notoriously, a lot of the flats in the area of San Francisco near the Sunset would have drains installed in the middle of the living room floor. You'd go rent an apartment and you'd notice this little wood cap on the ground. You'd see a beautiful old wood floor and then this repair piece of wood. And if you pulled up that little piece of wood, you would realize there was a drain pipe installed under here. You'd go, why would someone put a drain pipe in their living room? Well, it's because in San Francisco, guys, in the 60s, 70s, they would turn apartments into grow houses. And they literally wouldn't care. They would just put a bunch of plants in a room. And, you know, this is before all the technology to water them and everything. And these big, like, you know, these things you can see on documentaries and online and stuff. They would just fill a living room of an apartment. They'd rent an apartment, fill it with plants, put some lights in it. And then they just come in with a hose. They'd get, you know, like a little pressure wash hose, like a portable one, and they would just literally spray down the entire room and let the plants drain out of the bottom. All the water would hit the floor, and they just had a drain installed in the middle of the living room floor. I mean, it was like, so you'd see these a lot in San Francisco. It's one of those like uniquely San Francisco things that reminds you, if you live near the Haight or in the Sunset or the Richmond or something, you might see some of these sometimes. But it's one of those things that just reminds you of the history and the culture of the place. Anyway, why did I say all that? Oh, because apparently we're talking about marijuana. No, one of the things I learned, I hope this is appropriate. No one's turned it off yet. I'm not making any judgments about whether stuff is right or wrong. It's illegal where I live now. I don't use illicit anything. I don't use it. I did try it when I was younger, but who hasn't done that, right? I mean, if anything, that qualifies me to be president because that's what they all have in common, right? Isn't that weird that trying weed in college seems to be the only unifying thing that our bipartisan government has in common? Every president says, I don't use drugs. I did some in college. Like that's everybody says that. It's the one thing that art really should be bringing politics together. We all tried it in college, right? Okay, some of the more conservative fans have completely turned this off now. They think I'm a total like pothead or something. I am not. I don't even really like beer very much. And cigarettes are just plain unhealthy and bad for you. Don't do that. Cigarettes. And they also, it gets into your car. And also, here's another pet peeve. Please don't sell me gear that you smoked around. There's almost nothing that infuriates me more than buying a guitar and I unbox it and I go, well, come on, you mint condition, excellent condition, yet it reeks of smoke. Like, now I understand if you've been bringing this out to a bar or something, it gets in there. Whenever I go to Las Vegas for trade shows or whatever, even if I don't spend any time in the casino, just literally walking through a casino floor to get to your hotel room, I will come home and my wife will say, all your clothes smell like smoke. And they do. They smell like cigar smoke and just that stale, smoky air that you don't even realize when you're there. Anyway, jumping back to my friend Kate. My friend Kate was so focused, so on it. She's one of the smartest people ever. If there's anybody I could work with, it might be Kate. She just such a great partner to have in all those projects and everything. But Kate, I found out later, she was a day trader, which meant she actually sold marijuana. And Kate smoked every single morning. She woke up. A lot of people have coffee. Not Kate. She woke up, lit up, went about her day. And she told me, she said, HW, I cannot focus. My mind is so crazy. My mind is in 1,000 places. I can't focus or get anything done. But when I smoke in the morning, I smoke and it brings me down and I can focus on individual things. And the reason I was so shocked by this was Kate was the most laser focused person. She would take these big projects and break them down and just immediately approach them with such a logical, clear roadmap of, okay, here's the semester long project. And just instantly, okay, we need to get to this and this and this step. Here's three steps we need to get to. In order to get to the first step, we need to do this, this, and this. Can you do this? Can you do this? And can you do this? And she would just break this stuff down. She was such a great leader, so focused. And that was one of my first experiences meeting somebody who, to me, really didn't fit the stereotype of like what a pothead is like, because I was like, oh my gosh, you are one of the most focused, administratively gifted, like leader people I've ever met. And you smoke every single morning. This is insane to me. Insane. I've only met one person that was like that. Other people I know who smoke a lot, and I don't really know any in Tennessee. I used to know them in California. Isn't that weird? I don't know people who really, I don't, there's way more potheads in California than in Tennessee. Who would have thought? No, but everybody else I know, just like, you know, really, they're really good at Call of Duty. They're typical, right? They're very typical. Anyway, moving on from here, I have no idea how we got on that tangent. And I'm not going to go back and listen and figure that out. But got on that whole thing. Oh, I have to be careful because I have that obsessive thing. And so I got to stay away from all that stuff. And so I do. I don't know where we were. I don't know. I got too many pedals or something. Okay, well, the point of this segment of the podcast was to discuss direct profiles and my experiences with them. But seeing as I am 41 minutes in, I'm not positive I want to, yes, I'm going to just do that now. Okay, the original point of this podcast was to discuss direct profiles and my experience with them right now. So as you know, as I've been talking about for way too long now, I figured out that direct profiles are something I should be producing. And that's something I should have been producing for a while. So I went out, I got the Powered Kemper, and what did I find? Well, here's some interesting stuff I found, and this is what I found. Now, first, let me just start out by telling you, the Seuss recently told me something interesting. The Seuss told me that with his Line 6 Power Cab, he didn't like the direct profiles as much as he liked profiles that were studio profiles where he eliminated the cab and then ran them through some of the speaker some of the speaker simulation in the Line 6 Power Cab. And I've talked about the Line 6 Power Cab. It did sound more like an amp in the room. Now that I have my Kemper through a real speaker cab, tomorrow the Tone Junkies are coming over. I'm recording this on a Tuesday, the 7th of August, 2018. This way later the aliens, when they discover this transmission, can know when it was from. Okay, but the Tuesday, the 7th, and tomorrow, the 8th, the Tone Junkies are coming over, and the people from Mission Engineering, Paul from Mission Engineering, was nice enough to send me his Gemini 2, which we're doing the video. We were going to do it on Friday, and then I just lost track of time, and it was too hard. We forgot the power cab and stuff. I wasn't going to be able to do it, so I said, don't bring the power cab. And then I thought, well, we could do it, but then I had already told him not to, and it was late at night. Anyway, we're going to be comparing the Gemini 2, just the Gemini 2, the power cab, the Freedman ASM-12, the Freedman ASM-12, the Alto 210, and an actual guitar speaker, my favorite guitar cab run with a powered Kemper. And we're going to take these all out. We're going to put some room mics up, and it's going to be similar. I'm going to attempt to do a similar thing to what Tim Hearabout did on YouTube. I probably have similar results. We're gonna try to go, hey, here's this, what's the best FR, and we're gonna break them down. What should you buy? What are you looking for? Because the question of what you should buy is always predicated on what are the outcomes you're looking for, right? I might have a 412 cab if I never wanted to move a cab. Ooh, I should get a 412 cab for my office and just leave it there all the time. Ooh, and I could have greenbacks and H30s in it. Oh, no, I could have creambacks and golds. If it's a stereo cab, I could have golds on one side, creambacks on the other. I could have just creambacks, just golds, or both together. Because the lines sit, because those Marshall cabs have the A, B, or both switch. You know what I mean? On the 1960s A cabs, take out those terrible 75 speakers and put in those. Ooh, that'd be fun. Yep, that's how I get into trouble. That's how I get into trouble right there. You just saw it. That was the complete train of thought of how I just convinced myself I need not only a 412, but one with specific speakers for a use that really is not very practical. Ooh, but I could leave, because I'm never taking it out, I could leave the mics hooked up to it and I could have mics to like do some YouTube video. But why do I need that? I have an aux. The Kemper and everything. I don't need that. Okay. What did I think? Because tomorrow we're going to do the big shootout. But so today I just had to decide, okay, I'm going to go through a power cab and everything. Here's what I found. I took some of the creamer stuff because I had direct profiles of the creamer stuff and I had non-direct profile, you know, studio profiles, and I could defeat the cab. The studio profiles, at least for the creamer stuff, where I defeated the cab, were quite a bit brighter. The Kemper seems to be identifying some frequencies that are the cab, but some of the high end, not the highest high end, but it just sounded like the amp was dialed in brighter. When I took the same amp at the same gain settings, nearly the same settings on the amp, and I defeat the cab from a studio profile, run that into some guitar speakers, it was brighter than the corresponding direct profile. And I could immediately hear that. When I defeated the cab, I could immediately hear, this is not what that amp should sound like through this cab. It's too bright. And then when I put the direct profile in, I went, that's what I would expect this to sound like. I think it's worth noting that the Rob Chapman video that kind of has probably sold the most Kempers compared to any piece of media out there, is the one where he can't even tell the difference between his Red Dwarf Victory Signature amp and the Kemper profiles of it. But it's worth noting that they were running those through a guitar, the same guitar cabinet, the same speaker. So they really had a lot of the variables just removed from the equation because they were constant. They had some of those variables constant. So here's my opinion. After using the direct profiles into a guitar cabinet, I think the direct profiles are the way to go. I think it's totally fine if you want to use studio stuff, and you might even come up with results that you like better, depending on the amp, but those results might not be the most authentic. Meaning to me, what I noticed consistently across that set of profiles, now I need to try some other amps. No, but you know what? Actually, now that I think about it, I tried it on my AC30 stuff too, and I noticed how bright that sounded, and I expected it to not be that way. Because the AC30 used greenbacks, and I was using like a creamback speaker, but when I defeated the cab in the AC30, it was quite a bit brighter than it should have been. So what I would say is this. If you're using studio profiles and you want to defeat the cab, as a general rule, I might just be prepared to understand that, okay, what I'm hearing is a brighter version of what the direct profile would sound like. There's more high end. So what would you do about that? You could save another version of that profile with the cab defeated and with some high end removed from it. You could lower the definition, although I didn't actually try to solve that problem or match them. That could be something I do in an actual video. That would be a cool series. How to make your studio profiles sound like direct profiles. What are the tendencies of the Kemper when finding the cabinet? If I find that there are tendencies sort of across the board and not just with this amp, it one does one thing, with this amp, it does another. But that would be really interesting to do. But I found, and I had a very enjoyable experience with the direct profiles, and it's really motivating me to make sure I get more direct profiles out there. So I've got some time today, and I'm going to be making some direct profiles of some stuff I have around here and making sure that direct profiles are part of the Tone Junkie offering moving forward. I think powered Kempers are really cool. And I would tell you this, anybody who wants to buy a Kemper, this is now my opinion. I'm about to say something to people who haven't purchased Kempers before. And I have to ask myself, HW, how many people do you think are listening 49 and a half minutes into this podcast and haven't yet purchased a Kemper? Probably not a lot of people. You guys are probably the Uber geeks. You're probably the Uber Kemper geeks who are as into this stuff as I am. So probably you've already purchased a Kemper, but I will say this. I think there's a lot of merits in having the powered one and not using it. And I'm now looking back at what my opinion had been before where I kind of would tell people, save the money. You can always get another power amp if you need it later. You can get a little pedal power amp or whatever, or there's an add-on camplifier thing that's stereo and blah, blah, blah. But it takes a separate power thing, supply. So right now my opinion is this. If you can afford it, and the money is not the biggest deal. Like, for example, and I know money's always a big deal, and I have to watch myself because sometimes I realize I come across like, you know, very entitled or something, and you know, oh, money's no big deal or something. You know, it's not really 100% true. I have a pool of funds committed to buying and selling amps, and sometimes I have to add to that, because I lose money buying and selling these amps and stuff. But that's okay. You know, people buy the profiles, so it all works out. But I have to, you know, I what's the price difference? $300-$400 from a powered to a non-powered? Maybe it's a little more. I think it's $300-$400. Here's my thing. If you just sold a 2-Rock amp, like my buddy Morgan's debating on whether to sell his 2-Rock amp and just go back all into Kemper because we profiled his Bloomfield Drive 2-Rock. And now he's like, dude, this thing sounds great. I'm listening to these profiles. My buddy is using the profiles and it sounds like my amp mic'd up. And now I'm thinking of just going to the Kemper. So I'm like, okay, listen, man. If you're selling, so here's my opinion. If you're selling a very expensive amp, if you're selling a $4,000 amp, if you're selling a $2,500 amp, $2,500 will get you a powered Kemper and a remote and stuff. If you're selling it and you've got the money and you don't need the money for something else, if it's, you know what I mean? If you've got the money or it's $4,000 and you're like, well, I'm either going to come out $1,700 ahead or $1,400 ahead, I'm going to say go ahead and spend the extra money. Get the powered cab because you don't know – get the powered Kemper because you don't know what the future holds. It's nice to have it and not need it. It's nice if someone goes – if you're like, I've never used it in a year, but I got a call from a friend who said, dude, my guitar player dropped out. Can you sit in with us? And you get there, and the guy gives you all sorts of trouble, you know, about, oh, I can't go direct. You need to run through this cab. I don't know about that. I've got it all mic'd up. Or a church is like, dude, the mics are in the other room. You got to have your amp back there. What? How do I get the, you know, and the sound guy's like, I don't know how to get the mic cables from the stage to you, even though I could explain that very simply with how they have it set up. If they're running your pedal board to that back room, you just unplug an XLR, plug it in, there you go. But let's say someone gives you trouble on that. That's a nice time to be like, okay, I'll just plug into your cab. Or what if they're like, hey, we're not even micing it. It's a small like bar gig. And you know, there's going to be 30 people in here and we're just going to amplify the vocals and use your guitar speaker as part of the PA. That's an old school way to do sound. You can just go, okay, I can do that. It's like in a pinch, I can do that. You can turn off your cabinet. You can notice there's more high end. You can go into the mat. And if you have a performance drawn up, you're like, I don't want to change all these performances. No problem. Hold down output. You have a master EQ. Take out some of that high end. You should be able to approximate the sound pretty good. Or, you know, you just dial it in. You're going to be dealing with different speakers at that point anyway. So you're already going to be dealing with stuff you're not used to. You're already going to be dealing with not using in your monitors in that situation. My point is, it's nice to have it and not need it than to need it and not have it, right? So if money's not an object, if you're selling something expensive to get the Kemper and you've got money left over, I say get it. You could always go get a power amp. I'm glad I have one. And I'm glad this is the Kemper I'm going to be taking out with it. If I go on a fly date or something,
I'm really happy to do that. I occasionally get the opportunity to do some of these fly dates with some of my friends, and they're very fun, and they're very cool, and it's cool being able to show up and be ready for anything. It's so fun walking in with a Kemper and just saying to the dude, hey, I don't even need the mics. I just need an XLR straight to the board. And if you could leave the channel mostly flat, I think what you're going to get is a sound you're happy with. But, you know, of course, you're the sound engineer. I trust you to mix it the best for the room right there. With a smile on your face, arms a sound engineer. When you walk in and you go, hey man, this is a Kemper tip and trick right here. I should make a video that says Kemper tip and trick. Because I've shown up several times at places that have professional sound guys and church volunteers. And I've showed up with my Kemper and it's 6 a.m. and we're doing a sound check for a conference, or it's super late at night and we have exactly 20 minutes before we're supposed to start playing, whatever. When you show up, they're already stressed out. You hold out your hand and you go, hey man, I'm Jonathan. I'm playing guitar. I'm HW. Whoa, oops. Hey man, my name's HW. I'm playing guitar. Hey, I'm actually playing this thing called a Kemper. It's kind of like a modeler, but it all my guitar sounds are in it. I've dialed them in and they should be mix ready. So if I could just get what all I need is an XLR, I can go straight to the board. And if you can leave that channel, if you leave it relatively flat, you'll hear that what I'm sending you, you should be pretty happy with, in terms of that you're not going to get too boomy bass. It should be pretty dialed in for a band. But then, of course, you know, I trust you to dial it in for the room. Or just say, but of course, you know how the room's going to sound and stuff. So, you know, you can adjust from there. When you sort of give a sound, when you just acknowledge to a sound guy that, hey man, when you're kind and polite and you just go, and you just acknowledge that they know what they're doing, and you like, but you'd be amazed how much people are willing to work with you when you come at them with honey instead of vinegar. It really is. Whenever people are like, what do I do about these sound guys? I'm like, bro, give them a drink ticket, or literally go buy him a beer. Go to the bartender and go, what does a sound guy drink? What's his favorite beer? The bartender will either completely bluff you and sell you a $17 cocktail, say this is his favorite. You'll get over there and then he'll be like, I don't even like this. You know, right? That could happen. Or the bartender will know and he'll be like, yeah, I don't know, usually Hefeweizen, sometimes Bud Light. Just buy him a beer. Walk up and be like, hey bro, what's up? I brought you a beer. He'll be like, dude, thank you. Because those guys get so little love, and a lot of times the reason they're late and everything is that they're getting like $30 for like 3 hours. You know what I mean? And it's just problem, problem, problem. And the reason they're doing that is because the reason they're so hard to deal with is because straight up, $30 for 3 hours isn't worth it, but $30 for 3 hours of standing around and doing almost nothing kind of is. So at least for someone who's doing sound and their expertise and then people getting mad at them and stuff, and just being in that environment is stressful. Just go kill them with kindness, you know, have your powered Kemper ready to go and just be easy. If you be so easy, people will be so easy back to you. If you're nice to people in this world, if you're nice and you do things for other people and you wish them well, good things will happen to you. What is that? Is that karma? I don't know. So, some people call it karma. Some people say it is the wisdom of the Bible that says you will reap what you sow. But it's the truth, right? It's a universal principle. That's not exclusive. I learned it from Christianity. But it's not a truth exclusive to Christianity, meaning it's not a truth that you can't find other places. It's a truth that human beings in the world look around and they observe it. They go, aha, that's why it's in every religion. Sometimes people go, well, I don't know, I don't believe in karma. Well, karma is just the name for the thing that people are observing, right? There are places in this world that waited for missionaries for hundreds and thousands of years, right? The message, Western ideas, including what became the Western religion of Europe, the Christianity of Europe, doesn't get there for a very long time. And that's where we pull, that's where a lot of evangelicals and Christians today pull their religious root from. It's the Western European Christianity that comes out. It's not the Eastern Christianity. That's a different type. Like, you go talk to a Russian Orthodox person, your idea of what the Bible says to do and their idea will be very different. You will be using vocabulary like this. What is God's plan for my life? What does the Lord calling me to do? You will look at the verse in the Bible where it says, He has fashioned all my days, right? Or, for I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord, right? Well, we're preaching now on this podcast, but why not? When we read in the West, for I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord, we go like this. The Lord has fashioned all my days. He's read them in the book. He has a plan for every single day. I don't mean to burst anyone's bubble. It's a very me-centric way to read that. It's a little bit self-centered. I want you to just break this down for a moment. It's a little bit arrogant to approach a scripture. Just hear me on this, because I don't think it's wrong. It's not wrong. You have to acknowledge, okay, wait a minute. If I approach this as me, 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 I'm going to read this as the Lord has a plan for me. What's the plan for me? And I'm going to run out in the world with my blinders on going, Lord, what are you trying to say to me? What are you doing to me? And what you can miss in that is that if you have a focus on other people, you won't ask look what's unfolding for me. It's so good to be grateful when you see things working for you because the Lord works all things together for the good of those whom he loves. That's in there. So I don't think that's not happening. That's happening. But I just, you on your focus, I think we should be cognizant of going, the Eastern approach is this. This is what I'm trying to say. The Eastern approach is this. For I know the plans I have for you. That is sometimes translated like this. Not plans, but the word counsel. For I know the counsel that I have for you, says the Lord. And it's a counsel to prosper you. Well, that is interesting. Now it goes like this. It's not like, hey, Lord, you have plans where I become rich? Yeah. Well, no. It means this. I have counsel for you. See, I know all things. So when you have a problem, I can give you good advice. I can give you really great counsel. What should I do in this situation? I know the counsel I have for you. I know the advice. It's good for you. I love you. I would never tell you to do the wrong thing, the thing that harms you. So when you run into that stuff, when you go, uh-oh, fork in the road, I can't see what's down either of these doors. I'm afraid. I don't know what to do. The Lord is saying, I know the counsel I've got for you. Listen, take heart. I'm omniscient. I see it all. I'm not going to lead you down the wrong path so you get hurt, you get beat up, you get a pie in your face and then point and laugh at you. The counsel I have for you is good. It's for you. It's for your benefit. It's for my plan, really. The Eastern approach to that is a little less me-centric. And it goes like this, where sometimes in the West we go like this. What is the Lord doing in my life right now? Or what is the plan? We tend to take this very big, grand, master plan. What's the huge plan? And we tend to sometimes go like this. What's the huge plan? And under that is this feeling of, what's the huge plan where I change the world and everything changes and everyone remembers me? Well, who are you to be remembered? Who am I? Who's HW? Not important. It's just fun. It's childish. It's child stuff, right? What's really important is everybody else, right? What's really important is the people out there. Because for a lot of people, like, swallow this pill if you haven't. If you can hear me say this, swallow this pill. Of all the people who have ever existed on this planet, every one of them had the propensity to believe they were very important. And yet you know so little of them. Billions of people disappeared. Almost no trace of them. In the idea that you die twice. You die once when you die and, And then again, when the last person who remembers you, they die too. Then you're really dead. Then you're forgotten. How many people are forgotten? Do you even know the name of your great-great-great-great-great-grandfather or great-great-great-great-great-grandmother? You know the people you remember and that your parents remember. Sometimes you know the people your grandparents remember. But there are people that they talk to you about when you're young that you never really knew about. And when they go, so does the memory of that person. Dude, that's crazy. That's straight up crazy. You die twice. Once when you die, and once when the last person forgets about you. That's some crazy stuff. But I say all that to say this. What is the meaning of life? No, I'm kidding. We're dialing. We are conquering some big stuff here. What's the meaning of life? No, I say all that to say this. Take this sobering drink if you can. Most of us will live and die in relative obscurity. Our friends and family know who we are, but we're not Einstein. We're not Michael Jordan. We're not Messi, the soccer player, not the state of being unkept. We're not Cristiano Ronaldo. We're not Taylor Swift. We're not going to be known all around the world. Yet we're very important. We are alive. We matter a great deal. So sometimes asking yourself, what's the great plan for me? What great thing am I going to do? The great plan could be eternally important and might come with no fame or recognition at all. And that's not a bad thing. I just want to know that I can do something really important. I just want to know that my generosity was what it could, was as much as it could be, and that it was significant and meaningful. And sometimes it's easy to lose what meaning is because we think we get tied into the numbers. But a meal to a hungry person means the world, even if you can't feed them forever. You know, you hear something like Tony Robbins always says this thing. He's trying to feed 1 billion people in 10 years. Over 10 years, he's going to feed 1 billion people. And bravo to that. And that can have this effect where you go, I'm not doing anything very significant at all. I may not have that impact. HW doesn't have that impact. People don't have, not everybody has that impact. I'm glad someone does, and someone does that with that ability to help. But maybe you could do 100 or 1,000. And maybe no one's going to write about you or remember you like they will Tony Robbins. But that doesn't make it less important. You know what I mean? Wow. This is the most introspective gear podcast out there. I can say that without a doubt. The point of this was to talk about direct profiles. And to recap, I think the direct profiles are awesome and they sound great. And if you don't have, I'm going to do some more experimenting because I'm going to get my hand. I think I have an EHX 44 caliber around here, which is a little 44 watt pedal size power amp. And I'm going to try that with the Kemper and see if it does a similar thing or how it colors the tone and stuff. But I'm really into the Kemper with the powered stuff. So got some cool stuff coming up. Figured I'd put out another version of the podcast today. And let me know if you're into these sort of off-the-cuff versions of the podcast or if you want something a little more structured. I'd like to know if I should be tackling two subjects and be a little more focused or if the rambling's okay. I can't tell you I'm going to stop the rambling. It's just how much do I need to work in the more structured stuff. I mean, because today we covered everything. We talked about the meaning of life. We talked about counsel and plans and being a little egocentric when you look at what's going on. We talked about marijuana. We talked about powered Kempers.
We talked about Bad Cat amps. We talked about all sorts of things. It's been a minute eight. I appreciate you spending it with HW. As I finish my iced coffee that is now warm. It's this Khalifa Farm stuff. It's pretty good. It's got almond milk in it already, and I just have it in my fridge. And it's iced coffee with this almond milk. It's this Khalifa Farm stuff. And it's pretty good. It's pretty good. Starbucks has got like a woman, you know, like the Medusa lady. I guess it's Medusa. I don't know if it's Medusa. I don't know. You know, it's a lady with, it's not Medusa. It's some other, it's like a mermaid, I think, right? Anyway, I don't know. Anyway, it's got the, that lady. This Khalifa Farms lady has got another lady, and she kind of looks like Frida. You know, the Frida with the unibrow, that lady. Anyway, she looks a little more authentic. Like, I think Khalifa Farms is supposed to be like, I think it's Mexican coffee. Like, I think the coffee is from Oaxaca, and it's that kind of blend that, that like notes of cherry, kind of acidic bean, but when you cold brew it, low acidity, and then you know, you throw some almond milk with it, and really low acidity, and then this, they have a flavor that they do some like chocolate with it. I don't get that one. It's a little too chocolate milky for me, but I just feel like I'm a kid again drinking chocolate milk. My chocolate milk was one of my my favorite drinks. Going back to my obsessive thing again, there was actually in high school. See, I never really brought a thermos to school, except in high school I got really into chocolate milk. This is weird. I got really into chocolate milk, me and a buddy. We really started trying to like figure out what makes the best chocolate milk. If you comment chocolate milk, you will have my, like, anywhere. I'm going to post this on Facebook or something. Just say, I don't know, send me a message that says chocolate milk. I'll know you really are a diehard when you get to the end of this. But no, we did some experimenting where we would go. See, at the time, you could get 2 gallons of milk for $5. And so we would go to 7-Eleven and split it. We were broke and in college. But you know what? This is how you know HW isn't lying about this stuff. HW is legit, like I've always been this way. I was broke in college. I had the world's crummiest car. Was terrible. But I'm thankful for that car. I was so broke. You know what? I'm gonna keep going here. I was so broke. My dad had gotten married and moved out. See, most people move out when they're 18. My dad came to me one day when I was 17 and a half and was like, he basically showed me an engagement ring and was like, I'm going to ask this woman to marry me. And, oh Lord, it was a woman who worked at his company, which is a whole nother thing. Let me tell you how that ended. Not good. Anyway, my dad comes to me, he says, I'm getting engaged. And this is a real interaction. And he said to me, so what do you want to do? And I said, what do you mean? He was telling me I'm getting married. I now realize what the news he was trying to break to me. The news he was trying to break to me was kind of like, are you going to move out? Like, you should move out when you're 18 because this woman's going to come live here and I don't think you're going to love doing that. But I respect it. My dad had state. See, I respect it. And you might be saying it's a little bit cold or something. But my parents were separated. My dad had stayed single and raised us for all those years. For all those years since I was 4. So the dude had given us 13 years of like not really dating, not really doing it because he wasn't trying to bring women around his kids and do that whole thing, right? But I was about to turn it. My sister was out. My brother was living with my mom. He's handicapped, so my mom's his caretaker. So it was just easier that way. But I had both my parents growing up. And my mom was out of the picture. They were just both single, raising us half the time each. But they go and they say, my dad says, well, what do you want to do? And I go, with what? And he goes, well, with the house, meaning his house that he lives in, that he raises in. And I was confused at what he was saying. So I didn't even know. I was just very confused. So I said, what do I want to do with the house? Like, I was like, nothing. I'm not. I said this, nothing. I'm not getting married. What I meant was, what are you asking me? This isn't my house. Like, or like, well, he's like, what do you want to do with the house? And I was like, I thought he was asking me if I wanted to sell the house. And I was very confused why my father, who owns the house we grew up in, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, imagine if you're a kid, like you're 18 and your dad looks at you and like kind of you're out of context or you're just not following. And he's like, what do you want to do with the house? I'm like, what? I don't know. Put up new curtains? I'm not sure what you're asking me here, right? I was so confused. He kind of walked away from that. I could see like the look on his face. He walked away. Later, I pieced together what that conversation was about. But then some plans were already in motion. I realized he was asking me like how he could help me move out, you know? But what he took from that conversation was me being like kind of passive aggressively going, I'm not going anywhere. So my dad ends up moving out. I'm 17 and a half. My dad ends up moving out. He ends up moving like, I don't know, two miles away, and he rents a house. Now, here's why it worked out, because my – how the heck did we get on this topic? My dad, it turns out that the woman didn't, surprise, surprise, the woman wasn't really into moving into his house of 13 years. Like, she wanted to kind of start having a new marriage with a new, she wanted to get a new place. You know, she didn't want to move in on top of all his, you know, crap, for lack of a better word. He was a single guy. The place was decorated terribly. We had orange countertops and like a 70s couch, you know what I mean? But my dad was a hardworking dude. He was a mechanic growing up, and then he became a teacher at a community college teaching automotive technology, and then later in his life he became an entrepreneur and came into some money. But we were broke growing up. We were broke. My mom was even more broke. We were broke at my dad's house, and my mom was even more broke. And that was a whole – anyway, we'll get into all those HW formative year stories later. But – it's so funny. So what happened was, and the reason I get into the story is because my dad ends up moving out into this. He rents a house. He rents a really nice house, like a couple miles down the road, in kind of the nicer area. I'm up in this working class town of San Bruno, which is now San Bruno, California, is where YouTube is headquartered, Walmart.com, Oracle has some big stuff going on there. And there's a lot of Google people working out of a satellite campus there. It's right between Silicon Valley and San Francisco. It's not working class anymore. Prices have gone through the roof. It's not the city I grew up in. I miss the old city. But what happened was my dad was like, well, get some roommates, right? Because my dad was like, I think he had some guilt about leaving me behind in some way. He had some guilt about leaving me behind, but now I look back, I don't fault him at all. But, you know, he was like, well, if you're going to live here, I kind of need to get some money to rent this place. I go, yeah, okay, man, I got it. I got you. So I go get some roommates. One of my roommates was this guy who we became chocolate milk scientists together. And I get into all that story to say this. We were so broke because you're broke in college. And I was going to like community college, playing a bunch of Halo. My diet was mostly bagel bites and RC Cola. And we would go to 7-Eleven, we'd drive to the 7-Eleven, carpool, of course, and we would do this sometimes. We would go to the Boston Market, and at the time, Boston Market had a $5 chicken dinner. Winner, winner, chicken dinner, for those of you who are fans of the popular PlayerUnknown Battleground game. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. Also, that's just a common saying. We would go to Boston Market, and you could get... at Boston Market, like a half a chicken. They had a meal that was half a chicken, two sides, and a piece of chocolate cake. So we would send one of them in. We would send one of us would drive. It was unspoken. The passenger always got out. I don't know how you make these rules in college. You just feel it. You just feel each other out. So if I drove, my buddy Tony would run in. He'd put up the $5 to get the Boston Market meal. And then I would drive over to the 7-Eleven, and we would usually both go into the 7-Eleven. I don't know why we didn't just send one person in. I think Boston Market, who wanted to wait in line, I guess, you know, whoever got to wait in the car could listen to the radio. But 7-Eleven, you know, you both went into 7-Eleven. And then if I drove and he got the Boston Market, then I would go in and I'd pay for the milk, the 2 gallons of milk for $5. And then we'd head home, you know, and we each had, we had different shelves in the fridge. You know how it is with roommates. So, you know, we'd put our milk in there and we'd split up this Boston bar, you know, we'd get a plate, you know, you cut both sides in half. So it'd be half the mac and cheese on the plate, half stays in the to-go container. You got to cut that chicken in half and, got to cut the other side in half. We usually did mac and cheese, potatoes or something. And then we do the chocolate cake, cut that chocolate cake in half. Now look at this, for $5, right? For $5 each, because we just spent $10 together, $5 each, you just got dinner, you got a quarter chicken, so that's your, maybe a leg and thigh, or you got the breast. You got, you know, a little help in there, and you know, we'd be like, we got smart, we tell the Boston Market people, like, hey, be generous with the sides, you know what I mean? Because the sides is like, are Boston Market still open? I'm not sure. The chicken's the chicken. It's a half a chicken. However big that chicken was, you got half of it. You know, Mother Nature decided how much chicken you got. But that dude with the scooper, he could be heavy or light on his scoops. So we, you know, and he's a young dude. He got it. We got bold. We'd just be like, I'll get the half chicken meal. Yeah, can I get mac and cheese and mashed potatoes, you know? And we'd be like, pile it high, man, you know? Like, hey, help me out. Help a brother out. You know what I'm saying? And we'd be like, hey, feel free to put some extra on there if you're into it. And he, and you know, they'd like laugh. They'd smile. They'd give you a big scoop. So when you're splitting it, the big scoop. So we'd be full on that. We'd be good. That was good for a meal. And then, you know, whatever. I don't know. You eat Oreos and milk or something. What we do with the milk? Well, then we'd, you know, we'd have a glass of milk or something and play some FIFA or some Halo or something like that, you know. We'd just do that. That was college, man. And we got really into chocolate milk, and we would experiment with what was better, the powder, Nesquik powder, or did you use Hershey syrup? Or, you know, Did you put it at the bottom of the cup, mix it in? Would you mix those together? Has anyone ever tried? You know, we melted chocolate bars. Later, someone turned us on to bittersweet chocolate chips, which I said, this is better for melting. You don't really need to melt. You don't want to melt milk chocolate into milk. It's already got milk in it. So you're going to kind of dilute it too much. Try these semi-sweet chips. This is what they put in chocolate cookies. Try these, and they're not too sweet, but they're still rich and chocolatey. You put that in there, and, you know, we experimented. I'll tell you what I found, because at the time, we weren't really measuring out the milk, but all of our experiments involved one full red Solo cup of milk, and when I say full, I mean, you know, filled 3/4 of the way or a little bit more, maybe 5/6. But that's about as scientific as you need to be when you're dealing with chocolate milk, you know, science. How much milk is required? One Solo cup. Filled how much? You know, a reasonable amount. I mean, full, but not so full that you can't walk at a normal pace and spill it. You know what I mean? You don't want to spill it. I don't know. What is that? It's a little more than 3/4. I bet it's less than 5/6. What is that? It's not 5/8. It's more than that. What's more than, it's 7/10. No, it's a little more. That's less than 3/4. It's 80%, I think. I think it's 80%. Yeah, it's 80%. Let's go there. It's 4/5. Not 5/6. That's too high. That'd be too much in a cup. It's 4/5. 80%. Well, good thing we settled that. I was worried we weren't gonna figure out how much milk to put in your Solo cup to make the perfect cup of chocolate milk. Then I would take a large spoon, like the kind you have, and I would take a heaping scoop of Nesquik. Not like an even scoop, right? And not even teaspoons. I guess we could have used measuring cups, but we were in college. We didn't have measuring cups or measuring spoons. I took just a large spoon from a fork, knife, spoon set. A heaping spoonful. One, two, and then like a quarter of a spoon. And then I'd mix that, putting the spoon all the way to the bottom, mixing vigorously. And what would transpire was that enough of this milk would absorb, I guess this chocolate milk is what you would refer to as milk soluble. It's so stupid. For those of you who remember science class, items are either water soluble or not. Can things be oil soluble? I don't remember. Anyway, does it dissolve in water? Is it? And this chocolate milk powder is designed to dissolve in water. So that's what we did. And I always found that was a perfect amount. Now that left a couple little, kind of clusters of some powder that you couldn't quite get all the way mixed in because the powder would clump together. Sometimes you get wet around it and you get a little ball of chocolate, but that was par for the course. And I enjoyed having, some chocolate floaties on top. This has been episode 16 of the Tone Junkie Podcast. And I think a discussion on where we go from here moving forward is, it needs to happen. What is this podcast? Is it all ramblings? Is it? Just completely introspective HW? No, I don't think it is. Because we're going to get Michael Britt on here real soon. Really soon. Really soon. I'm HW. Thank you so much for listening. This has been episode 16. I have no idea even what to call this episode. I literally have to go back and listen to the first 10 minutes of this podcast so that it at least makes sense if you listen to the beginning. HW, out. I got to go profile.